This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم فإنهم عدو لي إلا رب العالمين الذي خلقني فهو يهديني والذي هو يطعمني ويسقين وإذا مرضت فهو يشفين والذي يميتني ثم يحيين والذي أطمع أن يغفر لي خطيئتي يوم الدين رب هب لي حكما وألحقني بالصالحين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين أما بعد Once again, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته. So today, inshallah, I'm going to continue talking to you about Surah Al-Shu'ara, where Ibrahim alayhi salam is now, he has disavowed those false gods and how they are his enemy. And now he's going to describe the Rabb to which he is, to whom he is attached and to whom he is loyal. And so the first expression he used to describe Allah, instead of the word Allah, he used the phrase Rabb al-Alameen. And that's the same phrase that we're familiar with from the Fatiha. It's important to know that sometimes the Qur'an will use phrasing that's given to Rasulullah ﷺ that echoes something that was said a long time ago. So even the phrase Rabbal Alameen, you have to trace where else is Allah saying that in the Qur'an. And one of the places we find it is on the tongue of Sayyidina Abina Ibrahim ﷺ. So actually, in a sense, that description that is inspired to Ibrahim alayhi salam is being echoed in the Fatiha also. So you make a mental connection even as you're reading the Fatiha of its association with Ibrahim alayhi salam now. You know, because فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌ لِي إِلَّا رَبَّ الْعَالَمِينَ. And in fact, all the things he's going to talk about next are the things that we say hamd to Allah for, in fact. So he's going to say, the one who created me, the one who guides me, the one who feeds me, the one who gives me drink when I get sick, the one who heals me, the one who's going to give me death, the one who's going to bring me back to life, and the one who I hope will forgive my sins on the day of judgment. All of those are alhamdulillah, isn't it? And he's going to have his own version of ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. We're going to see that in Rabbi habli hukman wa alhiqni bis-salihin. We're going to see his own version of that. And a dimension of Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim will be highlighted when we get there. Just a few things quickly about the word Rabb, which everybody should be familiar with the term, the definition. But a quick recap is okay, is beneficial. Al-Rabb who is al-Malik, wal-Sayyid, wal-Murabbi, wal-Mun'im, wal-Qayyim, is someone who is in charge, who has complete authority, someone who owns. And I always make that distinction. It's important to know. Someone who owns may not have all authority. American citizens know that really well. We can own a car, but we don't have the authority to do with it as we please. Even modifications have to go through a state inspection. You have a home, you can't just make whatever modifications you want as you please. You have to get city approval before you do that, right? So you can own something and not have authority, right? And sometimes people exercise authority over you without owning you, like a police officer can exercise authority over you without having any ownership of you. The word Rabb incorporates, for starters, both absolute ownership and absolute authority, both at the same time, right? And then, wal-murabbi, and a third dimension is added, which is someone who ensures growth, who nourishes, who, like, an example of tarbiyah, because murabbi comes from the word tarbiyah, is when you grow a plant, right? So you own the plant, you have authority over the land on which you're growing the plant, but that doesn't mean that you're watering it on time, or you're nourishing it, or you're making sure it gets enough sun, or you're removing all the weeds. So the fact that you're going out of your way to care for something that you own and have authority over is embedded inside the meaning of the word Rabb. Now, we know that you can own something, you can have authority over something too, and still not take care of it, right? So you can have things in your possession, People back in the day would have animals in their possession they didn't take care of, right? People can have businesses they didn't take care of, or, you know, you have storage units you're not taking care of, whatever. You can have things that you did not ensure that they are being nourished and developed, right? And murabbi is part of the meaning. Then al-qayyim is actually, it precedes that, is making sure that something is maintained. So Allah doesn't just own us and has authority over us, but actually make sure that we're doing okay. He ensures our survival, He ensures we're functioning, He ensures all of our needs are being met. And on top of that, He's allowing us to grow even further, wal-mun'im. And on top of that, He's giving us gifts, meaning undeserved things are coming our way because a Rabb doesn't owe you anything. He's giving beyond what you can even ever ask for. So what Ibrahim alayhi salam is going to do is he's going to make a list of things that he never asked for that Allah gives anyway. Like he couldn't possibly deserve them and Allah gives them anyway. And that's how he's going to describe his relationship with Rabbul Alameen. Now the idafa is made to Al-Alameen, which a literary way to understand that is all nations, all people, all generations. So he's not just saying that this is my Rabb, he's saying is your Rabb and the Rabb of all other nations. It's remarkable that Ibrahim alayhi salam said these words, because prophets, when you study prophets in the Quran, alayhi salam, they are specific to nations, aren't they? Right? So they're talking to a particular qawm. But Ibrahim alayhi salam is on his own in Ummah, and he's going to travel different places in the world. And he's going to be made a leader over an-nas, inni ja'iluka lin-nasi imama. So there's a universality to Ibrahim alayhi salam. There's an all-encompassing concern for mankind in the legacy of Ibrahim alayhi salam. Angels are coming to him and he's arguing about a nation that they should be saved, that he wasn't sent to as a messenger. They were sent to the people of Lut, and yujadiluna fi qawmi Lut. Right? He's building the Kaaba and he's not praying that the people of the region should come. He says all humanity should come. Their heart should be inclined towards it. So he's in a sense the precursor. He's already got global concerns, right? So, and he uses the word Rabbul Alameen. And what does Allah describe? Rasulullah SAW says with what words? وَمَا أَرْسَلْنَاكَ إِلَّا رَحْمَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ. We sent you nothing. We sent you as nothing but a rahmah, an act of loving care for all the alameen. So Ibrahim alayhi salam, the connection to Rasulullah is even established in some of these subtle words that are being used for him. And the mindset that Ibrahim alayhi salam has for humanity, the concern that he has for humanity, is already starting to come out as he's being kicked out by his people. The only exposure to people that he has thus far is his own nation. He hasn't traveled the world yet, right? But he knows wherever he ends up in the world, whatever religions he may be exposed to, whatever societies he may be exposed to, the Rabb is still the Rabb of all the alameen, the ones he knows about, the ones he doesn't know about. You see? And in it, there's a subtle, I think, a point of contemplation for a globalized world. You know, people, they belong in a certain culture, they're raised in a certain religious tradition, they're raised in a certain society, and because of the global, you know, economic shifts, they move, right? They move continents. So many of you that are sitting here in the United States, for example, have moved across the ocean like myself. And our parents come from a different part of the world. And they were exposed to a completely different reality than we are, right? And what happens sometimes is, typically where people move from areas just like osmosis, right? You go from things go from higher concentration to lower concentration. We go where opportunity lies more, where there's more development, where there's more opportunity, you know, where there's more progress. So people migrate towards that wherever there's economic, better economic or, you know, law and order type stability, right? And because of that, we develop this idea that the nations that are successful, they must be successful in everything, right? I mean, they have better roads, they have better buildings, they have better, you know, law and order, they have better discipline, they have better stores, they have better cleanliness, everything's better. And then some people are like, man, I miss back home, I miss our food, I can't wait till I take a vacation and go back. And then y'all go back for like a week and they're like, I gotta get back to America, I can't stay here. This is, you know, the stomach ache, I can't handle the stomach ache. I can't even see the water, I can't see through the water. And you know, man, I went, you know, when you go outside, the traffic, the dust, the dirt, you start complaining about everything, you're like, ah. But you know, this, what I'm getting at is, there's this mentality that successful nations must be better at everything. And you know what? Then they must be better at their view of religion also, right? So major nations in the world, they were the nations that became superpowers, their religion also spread. And so now, the Western nations are superpowers, at least for now. And when they are, they're not propagating Christianity so much. They're propagating materialism now. They're propagating the end of religion. They're propagating, this idea that people that are religious or have a spiritual worldview, this is an obsolete way of thinking. The world has to move forward. We're in the scientific age now, right? And so when a young man comes from a Muslim country and studies and gets a PhD or wants to study, all the people he's looking up to, his professors, the academics, right? The people that are millionaires and billionaires, the people that are doing TED Talks and talking about how they made their first 10 million or 20 million, the entrepreneurs, all of them have something in common. They're very godless. They're very religionless. So maybe, and then the thought comes in the mind, maybe the reason they're so successful is because they got rid of this thing that was holding them back, which is what? Religion. And it's all religions must be backward. You know what? Then my deen must not be too much of an exception either. Now, Ibrahim alayhi salam is in a village in Ur, back in the day, thousands of years ago. But as he's going to travel, he's going to see kingdoms. He's going to see places that have castles, places that are more advanced. He's going to see the kind of development that he's never imagined in his small little village, you understand? But when he goes there, he's taking one thing with him. Their roads may be better, their education may be better, their clothes may be better, their trade may be better, their wealth may be better. They may be better in every respect, but I have something that they don't have. And if they don't have it, they need it. And they don't even realize they need it. And that's رب العالمين. إلا رب العالمين. And I'll tell you the flip side of this thought process. Because I'm precursing this is a precursor to the world travels of Ibrahim alayhi salam, right? Musa alayhi salam was sent to one of the world's greatest superpowers. He was sent to Egypt, which was the world's greatest superpower. Today, they left such a mark on the world that today on the dollar bill, we still have a pyramid. They left such a mark on the world that the Supreme Court of the United States or other major government buildings in Europe, if you notice, they have long steps and they have columns. And those columns are usually cylindrical. And sometimes they're evenly cylindrical, sometimes they're slightly thick and then they get thinner. They actually mimic classical Egyptian architecture. This is their way of saying we're the new Egypt. وَيَذْهَبَ بِطَرِيقِ Fir'aun used to call their empire طَرِيقَتِكُمُ الْمُثْلَى, your exemplary lifestyle. Other people want to be like you. Other people want to follow your example. And it's true, if you study the ancient Egyptian empire, they, kings, princes, royalty from around the world, the Greeks, the Romans, whoever, they wanted to study. If they wanted their royal family to get higher education, they would send their princes and princes to the palaces of Egypt to get a higher education. So Musa, what I was getting at is Musa alayhi salam was raised in the world, the global dominant superpower that's to this day left a mark on the earth and the way we think about empire, right? And that empire, by the way, it's interesting. If you study the history of empires, the next major empire that left a mark on the world was the Romans. Right? The Romans were a massive, very prolonged empire. And the Romans, it's interesting, obviously the Egyptian empire is declining, the Roman empire is rising, and they took much of what used to be the Egyptian empire, right? And one of the things they would do that's crazy is they would take the obelisk. The obelisk are these long structures, they look like the Washington Monument, and that's not an accident. They are long structures, they used to have hieroglyphics on them, right? And they had, this pointy top, right? And they would pluck them out of Egypt and they would take them to different extensions of their empire as monuments, right? Why not build their own? Because to them, symbols of the ancient Egyptian empire was actually, these are actually a testimony to now we're the new Egypt. We made it, right? If you go to Istanbul, if you go to the Hagia Sophia, or you go to the Grand Mosque, right? Right next to it, there's an obelisk. And the top is Egyptian, and the bottom's Roman hieroglyphics, or Roman writing. of which King placed it and used to hold races there and stuff. It's really remarkable that that's the case. But why did I bring this up? Let me come to the point. The point is, Musa alayhi salam is escaping from the water. He's leaving Egypt, right? And he turns to Allah, and he never prayed against those people. He always said to Allah, Rabbi inni uthtu bi Rabbi wa Rabbikum an tarjumun. I seek refuge of my master and yours that you should stone me. Right? So, and you know, min kulli mutakabbirin la yu'minu bi yawm al-hisab. He seeks Allah's protection from every arrogant one that doesn't believe in the day of accountability. But when they were ready to kill men, women, and children, and they were ready to commit genocide of the Israelites, and Musa alayhi salam is escaping through the water, he told Allah something. You know, Rabbi innaka ataytahum, you know, zinatan wa amwalan fil hayati dunya. My Rabb, you gave these people beauty and you gave them so much wealth in worldly life. Like you made them more, he's acknowledging you made them more advanced than everybody, right? And then he says, so they can misguide others? They got all of that and they use that to misguide others? So you see, there's a contradictory picture here. Every nation wants to be like them. But Musa sees something that even the greatest intellectuals of history saw. He saw that the Egyptian way is misguiding others. They become full of themselves and they replace God with themselves. They become obsessed with their own worship. Their own greatness becomes their God. And then they cause their own destruction and destruction of all those who want to follow them. This is the way of Qarun. This is the way of the gardener in the Ashab al-Kahf. This is the way of the pharaohs. It's the same formula. And so when we read these words, these are brief words, فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌ لِي إِلَّا رَبَّ الْعَالَمِينَ. But as he travels to different places in the world, his attachment to the Rabb is never going to be diluted. His eyes aren't going to get dazed by what he sees in different empires. And he says, maybe I should reconsider my commitment to my Rabb. So you know, a young Muslim should not go to a university classroom and see an eloquent professor who's a proclaimed atheist and mocks religion, you know, and then feel like I need to be insecure about my religion. How could you be so smart and still not believe in Allah? Well, you know, the Egyptians are pretty darn smart. Their architecture, we still haven't figured it out. They're really smart people. You know what Allah is showing us in history? You could have really smart people in one sense and spiritually really stupid at the same time. You could have that. And that has always existed. And it still exists. In fact, it still exists. So فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌ لِي إِلَّا رَبَّ الْعَالَمِينَ. One quick thing I'll share with you before I go, because otherwise we're going to stay in these ayat and Ramadan will be over. الَّذِي خَلَقَنِي فَهُوَ يَهْدِينِي. So now, how's he going to describe Allah? The one who created me, then in fact, he is the one that guides me. So he's talking about creation and guidance in one ayah together, right? So Allah Azza wa Jalla in Surah Al-A'la says, سَبِّحْ اسْمَ رَبِّكَ الْأَعْلَى الَّذِي خَلَقَ فَسَوَّى وَالَّذِي قَدَّرَ فَهَدَى, right? So it began with خَلَقَ and then with هَدَى, right? What Allah is saying in that ayah is Allah created, for example, the tree. Allah created the bee. Allah created the camel. And when the baby camel is born, it knows to go to its mother for milk. It wasn't given a class or an orientation to go to its mother for milk. It knows to do that on its own. The bee knows to go to the flower and extract. It knows to go back and build its hive and serve the queen. It knows to do this because Allah didn't just create it, He also guided it. He guided every creature. He guided every tree. He guides the plant to incline towards the sunlight. He guides that, right? So Allah, there's a sunnah of Allah that He creates and He also guides. And you see Allah creating and guiding in nature all the time. Because everything else that Allah created, Allah guided it a certain way, it follows that guidance. But then human beings were the only ones, Allah created us, and instead of putting us on autopilot, He put our organs on autopilot. He guided my heart to beat a certain way. He guided my lungs, you know, to pump oxygen into my blood. He guided my neurons. He guided all of that. But He didn't guide my conscience except by His words. And then he gave me a choice whether you want to follow it or not. He gave me that choice. And so Ibrahim alayhi salam is saying, my Rabb never creates something without giving guidance. And so if he created me, then I cannot believe that he just created me and then left me alone. There are other philosophies of God that exist in the world where God created and then he got busy with other things. Y'all can do whatever you want. You know, so God's the creator. We don't believe in God as just the creator. Allah is not just our creator. Because the concept of a creator, like, you know, manufacturers create, you know, Apple creates an iPhone. But once they create it and sell it, they don't care anymore. They already made their money. If a car manufacturer sold you a car, they don't care about what you do with that car anymore. Actually, they're hoping it goes bad. That's why they put some bad parts in it. They could buy the new one, you know? So the idea of being a creator doesn't mean that it's going to, that there's a follow-up or there's a mentorship, right? And in fact, in different companies, especially because I come from software background, they'll sell you the software, right? Which is at a certain sticker price. But that's not where they make their money. They make their money on continued support and guidance. That's where they bill you. That's where they get you, you know? So, so what did Allah do? Allah created me. Ibrahim alayhi salam said, he created me, but he also continually guides me. He continually guides me. He actually directs me. So I wasn't just left to my devices. And if I don't follow his guidance, now think about that. Amin Ahsan Islahi said this. This is what I'll let you go with today. Amin Ahsan Islahi rahimahullah in Tadabbur al-Quran in some place. I can't remember which volume he said this in. But he talked about, you know, whenever you buy something, something advanced, like if you bought an advanced machine, a computer, a manufacturing device, a 3D printer, whatever. Nowadays, different technology, right? If you buy an advanced piece of equipment, you'd be really frustrated if you didn't have the instruction manual, right? And if you don't follow the instructions, you're not going to get the purpose for this machine. This machine that's supposed to be able to print 3D, you know, objects, you're using it to squeeze ketchup or something. I don't know. So, because you're not getting out of it what it was made for. The most exquisite creation of Allah, according to Allah Himself, is the human being. لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ We're a remarkable creation of Allah. So remarkable that the angels, the legions of them, are commanded to do sajda. You think the human being is just going to be left to his own devices? It doesn't come with an instruction manual? Doesn't come with what's the best use? What's the worst use? What are the cautions? What are the disclaimers? What is the beware? Isn't that what revelation is? It's literally the instruction manual for how to live my life. What's the best use of this gift that Allah has given me? These faculties that Allah has given me, this mind that Allah has given me, this heart that He has given me, this conscience that He's given me, even this body that He's given me. How do I balance all of it? That's the purpose of guidance. So he says, الَّذِي خَلَقَنِي فَهُوَ يَهْدِينِي. So for the Muslims, you know, I silently cringe sometimes when Muslims keep talking about Allah as my creator, my creator, my creator. Sure, He's your creator. But, you know, let's be more Ibrahimi. My creator and my guide. It's actually, they're hand in hand. They're hand in hand. Because Allah says, أَفَحَسِبْتُمْ أَنَّمَا خَلَقْنَاكُمْ عَبَثًا? Did you think we just created you for no purpose? You know, أَمْحَسِبْتُمْ أَن تُتْرَكُوا? You just thought you're going to be left alone? You're just left to your own devices? No, he's given guidance. So he acknowledges that, الَّذِي خَلَقَنِي فَهُوَ يَهْدِينِي, which is the most important thing after creation. Think about that. Now that he's created me, you would think the bee was told how to make its food. The animal was told how to get the milk, right? So then the baby knows how to drink the milk from its mom, right? Except Ibrahim alayhi salam is going to mention food and drink next. What did he mention first? Right after creation, guidance. Like for human, we're a different species than all the rest of the animal kingdom. Why? Because after being created, the priority for us is guidance, even more than food and drink. Even more than food and drink, subhanAllah. الَّذِي خَلَقَنِي فَهُوَ يَهْدِينِي وَالَّذِي هُوَ يُطْعِمُنِي وَيَسْقِينِي. We'll contemplate those ayat and move forward with this remarkable speech of Ibrahim alayhi salam tomorrow. بَارَكَ اللَّهُ لِي وَلَكُمْ فِي الْقُرْآنِ الْحَكِيمِ